Well, we're here today with RSO Music Director Stephen Larson, and we're talking Jurassic Park. It's already happened, but a lot of people have a lot of questions. So last Saturday, you performed this fantastic score as the audience watched the movie. Now, this was done previously with Wizard of Oz as well, but this idea of the live orchestra providing the music while watching the film worked so well with Wizard of Oz, and it was fantastic with Jurassic Park. I got to tell you, it was fantastic. But the coordination, the synchronization, I mean, it's got to be pretty complicated. Can you walk us briefly through how you prepare?
Well, first of all, just the difference between those two movies. Of course, Wizard of Oz is a musical. So besides the underscoring there's lots of song and dance that you have to coordinate. And that's really difficult because, I mean, you've got to be right on with the singers and dancers. Jurassic Park is a movie that the dinosaurs don't dance and sing, and nobody else does. But the movie lasts about 2 hours and 7 minutes, if I remember correctly, and there's just a little more than an hour's worth of music in that movie, maybe an hour and 5 minutes. One of the things that I was really shocked about when I first started studying this is that when you listen to the movie on the DVD, or presumably even in the movie theater, how little of the music you actually hear. They prioritize the sound effects track over the music. So you hear lots of screaming and dinosaurs roaring and things like that, and you're hardly aware of the music that's going on in the background. But boy, when you finally start looking at the score and seeing what kind of music that actually there is back there, it's substantial, and it's really great. I mean, people know the big themes, the two big tunes from Jurassic Park, but they really aren't aware of all of the underscoring that is so essential to those very dramatic action scenes, particularly towards the end of the movie.
Now, how much did you have to rehearse? Do you have extra rehearsals for something like this?
We had two rehearsals for this performance, two and a half hour rehearsals. We rehearsed on Thursday, and we rehearsed on Saturday afternoon. Thursday was basically a time to go over to run through the music, particularly the difficult parts. There were a lot of things that we decided, I decided that we wouldn't rehearse because they were just readable. They weren't any challenge. And then on Saturday, we ran the show from beginning to end, and just for continuity. So it was just twice through.
Now, when the musicians, I mean, I understand the musicians are going to rehearse their part probably at home quite a bit. Are they watching the film while they're doing that?
Some of them tried, but they ran into the same problem I referenced before, that when you actually are listening to the DVD, the sound, you hear so little of the music that it's very difficult to follow your own part. And I know a lot of them said they just finally just gave up and just practice the music on their own. So basically, this is very difficult stuff. I mean, everybody really had to go home and work out some notes on this piece because it was extremely difficult, very sophisticated scoring for each instrument, and nobody got an easy pass on this on this musical. Everybody had to work, but that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, they looked like they were working very hard, but they looked like they were having fun, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably very important. Now, on the night of the performance, you're standing up there with your score in front of you, but you also have, I believe, a monitor up there and maybe a speaker or something there. Kind of tell us what it's like standing, all the elements that you have to pay attention to when you're doing this.
Mm-hmm. The Because I've got the score. The score comes in two volumes. It's a very large score. It's an 11 by 17 paper. The monitor has a special version of the show on computer. There are several different tracks. When you just listen to the DVD, you're listening to one soundtrack. This is a special version that has several different tracks. You have a track of dialogue. You have a track of sound effects. You have a click track that has it clicks according to the tempo of the music. And you have the music alone. And you can choose which of those you want to listen to. Now, when I was preparing this, studying it at home, I would choose to just listen to the music alone and screen out all of the sound effects, screen out the dialogue. And I decided not to use the click track on this because it was just a personal preference. There's two ways of coordinating a film with the music. One is the click track, in which you wear headphones and you hear the clicks of the beat, the tempo in your ear, and you can therefore conduct according to that tempo. Usually the musicians also have headphones that they're listening to the clicks at the same time. I decided not to use this system because if you get a little bit off, that click doesn't change, it doesn't bend. And you're then faced with the fact that the music is just a little bit off of that click and you can't quite get it back on. In a studio situation, if you're recording the music for the movie, you can always say, oh, let's go back and do that again. We can't do that during a live performance. So I use the visual system. This is a system called Datsun Streamers. It was invented, I think, back in the 40s, maybe even the 30s, in which this was originally done on the film itself. And you will see a bar move across the screen, and when it reaches the end of the screen, that is a signal that you're supposed to reach a particular point, a particular measure at that point. And at other significant points, they would punch a hole in the film so that you would see this bright flash of white at that point. And that would be coordinated with the beginning of this measure, the beginning of that measure, so you'd be able to keep your time that way. There are a yellow streamer will go across the screen, and that'll tell you that it's a warning that your green streamer is about ready to approach. The green streamer goes across the screen. When it hits the end of the screen, that's the beginning of the music. And then at the right hand of the upper right hand corner of the screen, you have measure numbers and beat numbers. So you'll start with measure one, and you'll see if it's in 4/4 time. 1, 2, 3, 4, measure 2, 2, 3, 4, measure 3, 2, 3, 4, etc. If the meter changes, the number of beats change. And of course, the beats will speed up or slow down depending on the tempo. And so that's how you keep up with what's going on. At various different points, you'll see a green bar going across the screen. Again, that's a very important point then. So you speed up or you slow down so that you end up in time with this. And when it's all over with, a red bar will come across the screen, and when it hits the end of the screen, the music stops. And then there'll be a little thing, a little stopwatch, a little timer at the bottom of the screen, which will start counting down until the next musical cue starts.
Yeah, you did have a number of pauses, I noticed, in that film, so... You were sitting there watching that stopwatch then.
Right. The longest pause, I think there's one that lasts for almost 10 minutes. There are many that only last for a few seconds. And when it gets to the last 20 minutes or so, 25 minutes of the show, there are no pauses. There is nonstop music from there to the end. And that's when things really get interesting. It's interesting, though, the things that don't have music in the show. The whole Tyrannosaurus scene, which everybody remembers, of course, when the Tyrannosaurus is chasing the Jeep and everything, there's no music to that. they chose to leave that completely unaccompanied by music and just let the sounds of the screaming and the roaring take center stage there.
Well, you know, you mentioned that there was no dancing in Jurassic Park. I think those raptors probably danced quite a bit. The wrong kind of dance. What do you find particularly exciting about doing this type of concert with a film like this?
What's exciting is the underscoring, the music. Of course, when you come to the big Jurassic Park theme, bum 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 bum, ba da 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 da. That's all. It's a wonderful tune, and everybody enjoys playing that. But when you get to the music that was just written to dramatically accompany a scene, that's when it really gets interesting because, anybody can write a good – well, not everybody can write a good tune, but, okay, you can write a good melody and orchestrate it and everything, and that's just fine. But it really takes a genius to come up with the kind of sound that's going to accompany a particular dramatic scene, whatever it might be. And over the years, I just become more and more impressed with John Williams' ability to do that. It's just the more you look at the music, the more you keep finding. He's brilliant.
Well, speaking of him, we know that his music is extremely popular and memorable, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think inspires him when he's trying to write something to accompany a film?
That's a great question. Of course, I'll say right up front, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Williams himself would disagree with what I'm about to say. You start trying to list the number of films that you know that John Williams has written music for, and then multiply it by about 20. And mm-hmm. That's what he's done. The list of TV programs and films he's written goes on for about 10 pages of small type. And he's gotten to the point now where his brain, there is so much depth to the knowledge of writing for films that he can take an idea and work with that idea just in terms of compositional craft, the technique, in such a way and build that to fill out a scene. Anybody who writes for movies knows little tricks, little things that you do for an action scene or something, or for mm-hmm. a romance or something, little cliches, really, that you can do. Williams, what you're struck with Williams is that he doesn't use the cliches. He goes beyond them. There's a particularly great moment. I think it's at the end of The Empire Strikes Back. It might be one of the other Star Wars movies. In the closing credits, where he, in the course of about 3 minutes, he transforms the music from the Star Wars motif into the music of the Empire and in the Darth Vader's theme. And the last thing you hear at the end of that before it all stops is Darth Vader's breathing.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that.
It is just incredible. When you go back and listen to that a couple of times and you see how he took those musical materials and gradually transformed, gradually changed the mood, he is it's just a technical master at writing for films. There's just nobody like him today.
Do you think he's inspired by the classics?
Oh, yeah, very much so. He's Juilliard educated. He's also a jazz pianist and did a lot of work in jazz, but he knows the classics for quite a number of years. He was the conductor of the Boston Pops, conducted many of them, many of those classical pieces. he knows it all. I mean, he just is. I'd love to be able to get a brain transplant from what he knows about about film music and somehow soak some of this in.
Well, thank you very much. It was very informative.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you.
Bye now.